from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point.
Jolene, I'm begging of you, please don't take my man.
Dolly Parton has a good sense of humor. She jokes that she dresses like the town tramp, all vavoom and glitter. But we all know she can sing like an angel. She's made a whip-smart, giant career up from the foothills of the Smoky Mountains. She's 66 now, still trending hot in social media, and ready to give a little life advice. This hour on Point, the one and only Dolly Parton. You can join the conversation. How do you see Dolly Parton? Are you ready for some life lessons from this superstar? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And you can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. 2009, the graduating class of the University of Tennessee sat down, stood up, whooped and hollered. Dolly Parton gave the commencement address. She would become Dr. Dolly Parton on that day. Here's a little bit of that. She's going to tell us more about it today. But here's a little bit about Dolly Parton speaking to the class of 9 at the University of Tennessee.
The night I graduated from Sevier County High School back in 1964, we were all asked to stand up and talk about what we were going to do with the rest of our lives, and everybody had a different story. And when it came my time, I stood right up there and said, I'm going to Nashville and I'm going to be a star. Well, the whole place laughed out loud. And I was so embarrassed because I thought, well, how odd. Why is everybody laughing? Because that's what I'm going to do. But as bad as I felt at that moment and as embarrassed as I was, it did not shake me from my dream. So I guess I showed them, huh?
We guess she showed them. Joining us now from Carnegie Hall in New York is Dolly Parton, singer, songwriter, performer, actress, big-time businesswoman, big-time philanthropist. She's won 8 Grammys, 10 Country Music Association Awards, written over 3,000 songs, sold more than 100 million records, starred in the films 9 to 5, Steel Magnolias, and more. Founder of Dolly Records, of the award-winning theme park Dollywood, of the Dollywood Foundation and its Imagination Library. Her new guide to life is Dream More, just out. Dolly Parton, thanks for joining us. It is great to have you.
Well, thank you, Tom. It sounds like I've been busy hearing you talk about all that. I didn't know I'd done all that.
Well, I think you do know, and we do know that you've been busy and for a very long time and given a lot of pleasure to a lot of people. But we could hear in your voice, and we can read in this book, Dream More, there was something different, something special about sort of laying out your fundamental life advice for a graduating class of youngsters there in front of you. That makes you sit up and pay attention and think about what you really want to say. What was the heart of it, Dolly?
Well, actually, first of all, it makes me a little nervous to try to make speeches because mm-hmm. that's not really what I do great. I love to talk to the audience, mm-hmm. and I love to write songs and all that. But when they asked me to do the commencement speech, I was afraid I wouldn't be smart enough to do it or educated enough or to be able to say what I needed to kids that were really hopefully going to make something of themselves and certainly wanted to have an education. So I worked really long and hard trying to think about what I should say to them, hoping I had something meaningful. So I decided to kind of base the speech on what we've written in this book of the dream more, learn more, care more, and be more. Those are the steps that we use in the Imagination Library, where we give books to children from the time they're born till they start school, and they get that once a month, and they learn to love books.
40-some million books at this point.
Yeah, 47 to be
wow.
exact.
Wow, that's
since
a lot.
We started, that is a lot of books, and of course, all the money from this little book, the Dream More book, is all that money is going to the Imagination Library. But anyway, I worked real hard on the speech and prayed real hard that I wouldn't be too nervous. But they were very, very kind, and it seemed to really matter. Being a local girl, and they all kind of knew my background, knowing that you can come from almost anywhere and really see your dreams come true. So I just elaborated in the book just more in depth on those subjects of the dream more, care more, learn more, and be more. So I just talk about my philosophy and how I conduct my life and how I conduct my business. I don't think it's going to necessarily save the world, but I do think there's enough stuff in it that might be helpful to a lot of people.
Dr. Dolly Parton, we're going to pull away a little bit of that afraid I wouldn't be smart enough stuff. We can see from the record of your life is plenty smart and then some. It was a speech, and it was more than that. You sang for them as well, if we could. Here's a little bit from Dolly Parton, not only giving a speech in 2009, but singing for the class of 09, University of Tennessee, with her song, Try.
Try to make the most of every moment, 'cause if you never try, you never will. So try each day to try a little harder. And if you fail, get up and try again.
Dolly Parton's new book is Dream More, Celebrate the Dreamer in You. She joins us from Carnegie Hall in New York. You know, Dolly, I've always found you really interesting, maybe because you've got that showbiz shtick, and I know it's more than that, coming out of the foothills of the Smoky Mountains, but when you say you're worried you wouldn't be smart enough, we can see just how smart you are and have been over a long career now. Are you just toying with us when you give us that afraid I wouldn't be smart enough stuff?
No, I'm very clever, I'm very witty, and I'm as smart as I want to be about the stuff I'm smart about, but yep. I'm not educated. And I was afraid I'd, you know, maybe say the wrong words, which I often do, and don't know some big words and all that. And I thought, well, you know, I don't want to get out there and embarrass myself or make a fool of myself or make them think, well, Lord, you know, at least mm-hmm. we got an education. Mm-hmm. But no, when I say that, I know I've been very blessed. I don't mean that I'm not intelligent. Mm-hmm. I just mean that I'm not that kind of book smart in that world where all of those professors and all those people and all those high-class people that evidently got where they were, especially the biggest part of that crowd, from getting an education. And so I guess I'm just not used to making speeches either. So I was a little bit nervous. I have all the confidence in the world. Mm-hmm. I wasn't scared enough not to do it, of course. I agreed mm-hmm. to do it. Mm-hmm. But I have to say, I was restless in my sleep for a few nights. And I was glad when it was over.
Speak to your core message here, because you've got a bunch of things to say here, but at the heart of it is dream. And this is an old message in this country and a great one. And a lot of people who have accomplished big things like you often tell us this. And yet here we are in a moment in American history where, you know, a lot of people aren't sure that dreams pan out in the same way anymore. We want them to. We hope they will. But some people have kind of lost confidence in that. I mean, you were coming up in the 50s and 60s and 70s. Does the advice still work the way it used to? What do you think?
Well, I think times are hard. There's no doubt about that. But people are not in any worse shape right now in these times than we were when I was growing up back there in the mountains, because we had absolutely nothing. My daddy worked like a dog, and we barely made it. So it's really easy to lose confidence when things are not going great. Mm-hmm. But that's when I know for myself, and I think it would be helpful this day and time, we seem to have lost all of our principles and our morals, and people, their spiritual life is just not, you know, it's just not strong anymore, or a big part of it seems like, and especially the young people coming up. I think we're missing and lacking stuff there, but it is easy to be confident when things are going great, and it is hard, you know, when things are not. But there's still room to dream. There's still hope out there, and I dream, and I hope that things are going to get better. I believe we should pray for whoever our leaders are, and I just wish people could, as one of the chapters in the book is, to care more. You know, it's like care more, you know, by caring less and caring less about, you know, saying bad things about people, caring less about, you know, thinking you have to be number one at everything, but just kind of lay your foundation, dream your dreams, work toward them, and hope and pray that things will work. But it's natural to be down at the moment, but I'm looking for better times, dreaming of it.
things weren't always so great in any case. In the good old days when times were bad, you sang 1969, first big solo. Here's a little bit of that, Dolly.
Yeah.
amount of money would have me live through it again. You dedicate the book in part to your father, you say, who never learned to read and write and paid a dear price for that. What was the price he paid, Dolly?
Well, my dad had to work so much harder than he probably would have had he got an education, because my daddy was so smart, so brilliant. But he was also, you know, insecure, you know, in big crowds or around people that he felt, you know, were more educated. Mm-hmm. And he felt that he couldn't learn to read after he was grown like that. I think he was too embarrassed to even try. But he couldn't, like so many people in the mountains that had all these big families, they had 14, 15 kids, some of them, there's 12 of us, you know. Mm-hmm. And so people had to go to work to help support the family. And so Daddy never, you know, never learned to read and write. And I just have always wondered how, what all my daddy might have done had he got some sort of an education. But I have to say, in his honor, that he did a wonderful job considering all that to put food in the mouths of so many kids, and always to keep a roof over our head, you know, and a bed to sleep in, even if the roof leaked and, you know, the bed had three or four kids in it. He still, and we had something to eat, even if it wasn't always what we wanted. We always had something to eat. So I have a great love and respect for my dad.
Dolly Parton, please stand by. The new book is Dream More. Here's a 1959 puppy love, 13 years old, Dolly Parton. You can join us, 800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back with Dolly Parton.
And I must confess, I'm really hooked. Puppy love. Sitting on the front porch on a summer afternoon, in a straight back chair on two legs, leaned against the wall.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with singer, songwriter, entrepreneur, superstar Dolly Parton about what she's learned in a big, big life. My Tennessee mountain home behind us right there, 1973. Dolly Parton joins us today from Carnegie Hall in New York. She's out with a new book, Dream More. It's built off a commencement speech she gave to the University of Tennessee graduating class in 2009 in Knoxville, Tennessee. You can join the conversation today. How do you think of Dolly Parton? Country, pop, big hair, big ambition? What have you heard in her voice, seen in her big career? Are you ready to take life advice from Dolly Parton? We're at 1-800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. And Dolly, we've got callers for you. Kathleen in Clarksville, Tennessee, you're on the air with Dolly Parton.
Hey. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, I had to just call because Dolly Parton has been a huge part of my life since before I was born. My grandmother was from some little dot on the map called Coaltown, Kentucky. And in our hierarchy of country music, it went the Carter family, Dolly Parton, Loretta Lynn, and, you know, then it filtered down.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing is, my grandmother, she had about a third grade education, but one of her mantras in life was, you know, if Dolly Parton can make it, y'all can just do it yourself, too. So, you know, I don't want to hear no whining.
Did it work for you, Kathleen?
Yes and no. I did go into the medical profession, which didn't require a college education, and I ended up, you know, I went to New Orleans after Katrina and worked there medically. It messed up my back, and a lot of people would say I lost everything because, you know, I had cars repossessed and all that because I couldn't work. But I found it in myself at 45 to go back to school because I want to be a school teacher. And, you know, the thing is if it wouldn't have been for my grandmother, I mean, I know how to make soup out of a handful of this and a whole lot of hope. And no matter how tough the times are, I mean, I definitely inherited a backbone from that woman.
And she got a little inspiration for that from Dolly Parton. She said, if Dolly can do it, you can do it. What do you think of that, Dolly Parton?
Well, personally, I think that's great. And Kathleen, hello to you. I love all the folks in Kentucky. That state is very much like Tennessee and sounds like your grandma grew up pretty much like I did. But I think it's wonderful, whether it be me or anybody else that's been an inspiration to people, then I think that's great. Because even in this little book or even in my life, I'm not trying to tell other people how to live. I just kind of, they say the best teachers are the ones, you know, that where you live by example and people want to follow. But I've just been very blessed. I've had a lot of wonderful people along the way helping me out. So I don't take credit, you know, for that. I always give God the credit, but now I will take the cash.
The businesswoman is always right there. Kathleen, thanks for your call. Let's get one more from down that way. Mount Juliet, Tennessee. Mark is calling. Mark, you're on with Dolly Parton.
Hi, Tom. This is a real honor, Dolly.
Hi, Mark.
I'm raising two sets of kids right now. The older ones are beyond the age of the Imagination Library. The younger ones, however, have had it since they were born. And I've got to tell you that there is a real difference in the education levels of the kids I see in grade school and kindergarten and preschool now, since your program has been in place, and the older kids' colleagues, contemporaries. And I have to think that that is due in some part to your efforts. And thank you so much for a wonderful program.
Wow.
Well, thank you. That's very nice to hear, Mark. And it's like it's wonderful. Of course, we can't help enough kids. We've given away 47 million books to little kids since we started the Imagination Library, but there'll be more to come. And if we can inspire them in any way, if they can learn to read, we send those books out once a month till they start school, and then it's in their name, so they actually get that in the mail, and they run to the box. It's something that's theirs, so it makes them want to lay claim to it, and they're going to make somebody sit down and read to them. So it's just like when I talked about my dad not getting an education. If you can read, there's a book on every subject in the world. You can self-educate yourself if you can't afford to go to school. So that is our point and our plan, and I'm glad your kids are getting some good out of it, and hopefully we'll just help more kids along the way.
Mark, that's really fantastic. Thanks for your call. Dolly, how does it work exactly, the library, when a child is born? How do you know that they're born? How they start getting books when? It's early childhood education, compliments of Dolly Parton and your foundation, but when do they start showing up? How does it work?
Well, actually, you all the parents have to do is just sign up for the books in their area where they have the Imagination Library, and it goes to all children. Not this is not something just for poor children. This is for all children, and for from the time they're born, when you know their names kind of show up or the parents register them, then they get that book. There's no other obligation for them, and so it's just. We want them to learn to read. This started out just as a personal thing dedicated to my dad. I dedicated the book to him, but it was because of Daddy that I did this whole Imagination Library, and he was so proud of the work that I was doing and how well the Imagination Library was doing when he passed away. He got to see so much good from that. But it was to, you know, to inspire other people and to help them with something that I knew so much about and had experienced with my dad. And like I said, I'm not that educated myself. I only have a high school education and didn't even like school that much because it was hard for me, too, being brought up, you know, without the clothes to wear and all the things you want to, you know, to have as a teenager. But anyway, I got through, and I'm proud I did, and I'm just happy that we can, you know, can help. And all the people have to do is just go register for their kids, and that's all it goes. Now, we started in my hometown, went all over Tennessee. Now we're in three countries. Now we're in Canada, United States, and in the UK, and we're just growing every year.
Dolly Parton writes in her new book, Dream More. She says, until I was a teenager, I used red pokeberries for lipstick and burnt matchstick for eyeliner. I used honeysuckle for perfume. We were raised in the Pentecostal Church of God, and they believed that wearing makeup was sinful. My grandpa Jake, she writes, my mama's dad was a preacher, so I had to sneak around and make myself look all pretty, but then wash it off before they caught me. I don't think there's any shortage of makeup on your counter these days.
No. And my grandpa, though, Tom, he was just certain back in the early days when I first started bleaching my hair and wearing makeup, and it was so totally against that. But my heart was good. I always said, I want to go to heaven, but I don't think I have to look like hell to get there. So that was kind of my philosophy. And my grandpa thought I was going to go to hell till after I became a star and wrote a song about him, and then he thought I was okay.
Melt all the hearts. Here's from that same commencement speech Dr. Dolly Parton made on that day in Knoxville, talking a little bit about her style.
There was a what they call the town trollop in our town up in Sevierville. Well, I thought she was the prettiest thing I'd ever seen when I was a little girl, and every chance I had to go to town, I'd see her, and I would just say, oh, she's so pretty. And they'd say, oh, she's just trash. And I thought, that's what I'm going to be when I grow up.
That's what I'm going to be when I grow up. Now, we heard that song from the late 50s, Puppy Love, there. You were in Nashville by the time you were 13, 14 on the Grand Ole Opry before, was it 1960 or something? I mean, very young.
Yeah, I was young. And actually, I recorded that little song, Puppy Love, when I was even younger than that. I was just probably 10 or 11. They didn't put it out till later.
It had quite a growl in it for a 10-year-old.
Well, I know. I was trying really hard to be rock and roll, you know, country Claude, trying to be something she's not. But my uncle, Bill Owens, who saw me early on and took a great interest in me, he thought what he saw was great potential, and he was there to take me around. And we recorded that, actually, that little Puppy Love record in Lake Charles, Louisiana, where one of my uncles was stationed in the Air Force there. And so we went down and bummed on him, laid around on him for a couple of weeks and made a few records and all that. Because we didn't have any money, but he did. But anyhow, then, as you say, then years later, still young, my Uncle Bill took me down to Nashville. We'd go back and forth in our old trap car. We slept in the car. I would wash my hair and clean up in the service stations, you know, the gas stations along the way.
Yeah.
And so we kind of paid our dues, but I wouldn't take nothing for that now. It's made great stuff to talk about right about now.
1969, you wrote on the back of a dry cleaning receipt, the legend goes, A Coat of Many Colors, came out in 1971, about how your mom stitched together a coat out of sort of pieces of cloth and rags given to the family. There's a picture of it, a photograph of it in the book. Here's the song.
My coat of many colors that my mama made for me, made only from rags, but I wore it so proudly. Although we had no money, well, I was rich as I could be in my coat of many colors my mama made for me.
Dolly Parton, 1971. I'm looking at this photograph of a coat here. I guess it looks like it's in a museum somewhere at this point, Dolly. But where, out of that kind of humble background, where did you come up with your really flash way? Did somebody recommend it to you? Was it really what you aspired to? And how have you thought about it as a woman through all these years now? It's become part of your calling card, very successful, and a lot going on behind and around it. But where did that come from?
Well, the way I look is since it's from a very sincere place, I have to say. It was then, and it is now. Because it's a country girl's idea of glamour. And that impression that was made on me early on, when I told you about that woman in our hometown, well, she was very outgoing. I mean, she was so flamboyant. She wasn't afraid to dress up. And we didn't have movies. I didn't have movie stars to pattern my look after. But when I saw her, I thought, wow, that's just the way I want to look. I mean, I thought she was pretty. So I'm not a natural beauty by any stretch of the imagination. So I just try to make positives out of all of my negatives. I just feel better if I'm looking the way I look. It just suits me just fine. And I hope other people can accept me as I am. I'm not doing it because I look totally artificial, but I like to think that I am completely real, where it really counts, and that's on the inside. But it's just the way I feel comfortable. When I try to dress down, I feel naked somehow. And I just feel like it's not me. It's like people are always trying to dress me up.
Yeah.
When I go to a lot of these big fancier places, like the Kennedy Center, when I won all those honors, they were trying to dress me up to be more stylish and trying to talk me into, you know, wearing a more stylish, glamorous look. And I thought, I can't do it. I'm not going to be happy. And I won the award because I'm exactly what I am and who I am. And I thought, well, why do I have to change it now?
You've got good humor about it. You include some in the book, some of your, Dolly's good humor. What's your favorite color? You say Miss Clairol, number 289. How long does it take to do your hair? I don't really know. I'm never there, you say. You know, something about home. Home is where I hang my hair. Are all those blonde tresses really not yours? Are you got some jet black hair going on underneath
there? No. I keep my own hair the same length and the same color, even the little frosting in my own hair. And I don't wear wigs all the time, like when I'm home or when I'm doing casual
things.
Sure,
but when you perform,
I
suppose.
But it's so handy for me, and I don't have great hair. And when I used to use my hair, bleaching it all the time, teasing it all the time to get it the way I wanted to look, and then spraying it as hard as a rock, it was just ready to, like, just break off in hunks. I thought, well, I don't want to do that. So that's when I started to wear wigs. And then they became so handy. Then I became popular for them. And I look back on some of those hairdos through the years that I thought I really looked good. And I think, oh, my God, I can't imagine what people, must think. Because I get a big kick out of it myself. But I remember how serious I was about it at the time.
Well, you had a career to make.
Now.
That was part of it.
But it was how I felt comfortable. Mm-hmm. I mean, how I thought I looked pretty. I thought I was all dressed up to go to those awards show, and I thought my hair had to be big or I couldn't go, and I certainly wouldn't have won.
Here's Dolly Parton's timeless song, I'll Always Love You. Whitney Houston made it famous. She wrote it in 1974 as a goodbye to her former duet partner, Porter Wagoner. Dolly Parton, 1974. Sound. Lauren in Beaver Dam, Kentucky. You're on the air with Dolly Parton. Thanks for calling, Lauren.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Dolly.
Hi.
I actually grew up in Beaver Dam. My father's from Roseanne, Kentucky. I'm sure you're aware that's where Bill Monroe's from. So we have serious bluegrass roots. I grew up, knowing you from music, but also my mother would always put on the movie 9 to 5 growing up. Anytime it was on, we would watch it over and over, and she would just get a kick out of you and those ladies just, turning things upside down. And I always thought it was kind of like a testament, that here was this woman, from Tennessee, from, Kentucky and stuff, who actually, could do these things, You come from, pretty much the same thing I come from, and you made your whole world. And it's just such an inspiration, to girls from Kentucky, from Tennessee.
Well, I'm glad to hear it from you, Lauren, and I'm sure Dolly is too. If I may, Dolly, when did you figure out that you had to become kind of a businesswoman to make this singing career work? Did you always know it? Was it just in your bones, or when did you get down to business?
Well, I just wanted to sing and write, and I knew I wanted to do it for a living. But it was only when the cold, hard facts smacked me upside the head when I was trying to put together a band, when I was trying to buy uniforms for the band or clothe them, and try to have a bus, pay diesel, try to buy my own stage clothes, traveling around. And I was not even making any money. It was taking everything that I was making, even after I kind of had a bit of a name. And I thought, I have got to take this serious. I thought, this is called the music business, so I need to take care of business. So I started trying to find ways to do that, and I've had a lot of wonderful people through the years to help me out. I should never, ever, ever, take all the credit for all the good things that's happened to me. I thank God first and above all else, but I've had people like my Uncle Bill, but I've had wonderful business people. I feel God has directed me in the right paths to find all the good people. So I had to start looking at it like a business where I could save a little money, make a little money, go out and, work with people that would kind of expand my career and show me different things. So it was early on in my career. I thought, gotta take it serious. This is not just, I can't just write songs and sing. I ain't going to get nowhere if I ain't got money to do it.
She's done a lot. Dolly Parton is with us. Her new book, Dream More, is to support the library that gets books to young kids. You can join the conversation. Does she melt your heart? Grab you with her high spirits. 800-423-8255. This is On Point. We'll be right back. You're looking like that. Why'd you come in here looking like that? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with singer, songwriter, entrepreneur, superstar, philanthropist, Dolly Parton, about what she has learned in a big, big life. Traveling Prayer right there from The Grass is Blue, her 1999 album. That song written by Billy Joel off the Bluegrass album right there. She joins us today from Carnegie Hall, her new book, written off of a commencement address she gave to the University of Tennessee in 2009, is Dream More, Celebrate the Dreamer in You. There's an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org, and you can join us. Does she melt your heart, grab you with her high spirits? Can you see past the glitter and va-voom to the savvy businesswoman, the mountain girl, the philanthropist, the tender soul? What's your question for Dolly Parton? Do they make them like her anymore in country music, in the Smoky Mountains? We're at 1-800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Dolly, a couple interesting things. One, I just didn't know. You've been married to the same guy, Carl Dean, for 45, 46 years now. I mean, I read here
46.
You 46. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. You met him on, is it true, on your very first day in Nashville at the Wishy Washy Laundromat? Is that true?
Yes, I did. And that was 48 years ago I met him.
Wow.
We married two years later. But there was a little laundromat there. I had brought dirty clothes from home in my haste to get on to Nashville, because that was where I said I was going. I'd been saying it for years and had been planning to do it. And I knew I couldn't leave till I was 18, because my daddy would have sent a posse after me.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, I'll wait till I'm 18 and then I'll go. And I left. And so I was just walking around outside drinking a cola and just waiting for my clothes to wash. And the laundromat was a new experience for me as well. So here comes this good-looking guy driving around in this Chevrolet. Mm. And he stopped and said something to me, and I flirted back, because I was always a big flirt, mm-hmm. still am. Mm-hmm. And so we got to talking, and 2 years later, we were married.
Now, it's funny. Yesterday, I knew we were going to be talking, and I saw that you were trending on Yahoo in social media. And the thing you were trending on was this rumor that's been out for years, Dolly Parton is gay. Now, I know you're a big icon for a lot of gay people, because you're very open. You're very accepting. I think you've got even a gay day at Dollywood. But where does that come from? What's that about, Dolly?
Well, I love all people. I really think it, you know, that we should just let people live their lives. Obviously, people are serious about what they do. And we should love the God core in everybody, and we're not God. We're just pieces of God. We all have the same light, you know, that He's put in all of us, and we're supposed to shine with it. And part of that light is supposed to be loving and caring, and not to be judgmental. That's God's place. So I just love people. I have gay friends. I have gay people in my family, and you have to love the people. You have to know, you know, that this is who they are, not something they do. And so I just really accept and love people. But it's been said, of course, that any time that you have a girlfriend, my friend Judy Ogle, who's been my best friend since we were in the third grade, we've been together all the years. I mean, I graduated, went to Nashville. She went to the Air Force so she could make some money and have some benefits and stuff for her family, who was poor and about as many as we were. But just because, you know, that we've been very close together, Judy has never married. She dates, but she's never married. And I think this is probably where people think, oh, there must be something going on there. But I'm not gay. But if I was, I certainly wouldn't mind saying so. But I just talked about that. And I'm totally open to people. I love people. I love the difference in people. I love people's hearts. I love their soul. I love their abilities. You know, and I'm not going to judge and miss out on wonderful people just because I grew up in the South and in a, you know, fundamental church and all that stuff. So I just, I just don't have
just
anything
you
more
are.
To say about it. That's just the way I am. We're supposed to love people.
Yeah,
we're not supposed to pick them apart.
We'll
and
take it.
Care about that, you know.
That flies here. Mark in Wethersfield, Connecticut. Mark, you're on the air with Dolly Parton. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Dolly. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good, Dolly. I just wanted to say, whether you're talking or singing, you sound real smart to me. Doesn't matter.
Amen.
Well, don't let me fool you. It's all rehearsed.
Oh, that's right.
Well, thank you. That's very sweet of you.
Oh, you're too much. Too funny. I just wanted to know, what are your thoughts on gay marriage?
Well, it's just like I was saying, I think they should get married. Why shouldn't they suffer like us straight couples do?
What about all the opposition to it? Where do you think that comes from? And sort of people are pretty tough on the gay community.
I understand it from every side because I know, you know, how people mm-hmm. are, and I know a lot of people like that. But I don't ever go in depth with those kind of conversations. That's not what I believed. I think everybody should be with who they love. It is hard enough to be loved. It's hard enough to find somebody to love and to love you back. That is not my place to judge them. So I just think people should be allowed to live and be all that they can be. So whatever that entails, I think they should do whatever.
That's pretty great. Here's traveling through right along that sort of theme. This is 2005 from the Transamerica soundtrack. This was won the Academy Award for Best Original Song 2005. Dolly Parton, Traveling Through.
God made me for a reason, and nothing is in vain. Redemption comes in many shapes with many kinds.
Dolly, I wonder how you look at religion now. You write in your chapter here, Be More. You know, you came up Pentecostal. They talked about praying ceaselessly as the right goal. And you said as a kid you didn't know what that meant. But now you do. At the same time, I've heard you say that you're not that religious. So what's the Dolly Parton path through through that thicket?
Well, I'm not religious, meaning any denomination, although I have a great respect for my religion growing up. You have to respect something that your grandfather is the head of and that your mother was very devoted to,
yes.
Knowing these people, knowing that they're wonderful, great human beings.
Well, you're right. If there wasn't a God, you'd have to make one up because you need that.
I would. I want to believe in God. I want to believe he's out there. And even if I knew for a fact he didn't exist, I'd still believe in it because we need something to believe in. But I do believe it. I mean, I start my day every day. So I'm very spiritual. I'm not religious. And I never was a fanatic like some of my people are and were and still are, and especially in that religion. But I just think that people just pick certain things out of the Bible and they just hammer on that and they're not seeing the whole big picture. So I do pray without ceasing. Sound so stupid for me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, it's like I always am aware that there's something greater than me. I'm always thanking God for the bad times and the good times. I mean, I just know something better's got to come out of it. And I feel better. It's more healing for me to think that there's something good going to come out of this. Even if it don't, I'd prefer to believe it. I just think there is, though. I just keep thinking, well, I can't just thank him for all the good stuff. I need to thank him for everything because maybe he's trying to teach me something here, even if it's just almost, you know, unbearable for me. But I just, in my heart, I just, he's there, and I'm always kind of, in my mind, I never lose sight of that feeling and that light of God that I want it to burn in there. And so I think I understood what that meant to pray without ceasing, just being ever grateful and being thankful and to, you know, and to know that you can call on that at any instant. Or that's what I feel.
Dolly Parton, her new book is Dream More, a little sympathy for the working girl, too, or anybody who works 9 to 5, 1980. She was in the movie, of course, with Jane Fonda, Lily Tomlin, Dolly Parton.
Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living, barely getting by. It's all taking and no giving. They just use your mind and they never give you credit. It's enough to drive you crazy if you let it.
Love that spirit. Let's get a call from Nashville. Curtis is on the line. Hi, Curtis. You're on with Dolly Parton.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi, Dolly.
Hi.
Dolly, we've never met, but I worked for a cleaning company that cleaned houses for you here in Nashville recently, up until just recently. Anyway, Tom, I want to tell you a story about Dolly.
Okay.
That just absolutely blew me away. I'd always heard how wonderful she is and how real she is, and I have firsthand experience of this. We came into one of her houses to clean, just a few, and she had apparently been there and had had to fix her nails or something, had some sort of engagement to go to. And she left us a note apologizing for the mess she left. And that just struck me as just so incredible.
Well, doesn't everybody do that you work for, Curtis? Doesn't everybody leave a note when they leave a mess for you?
Oh, right. Don't you know they do? I just think it's the most wonderful thing that here is this woman who is has fame that all you had to do is use her first name and people know who you're talking about. And she would have taken the time to leave us a note apologizing for the mess she left. And I'm telling you that Dolly is the real thing.
Hey, Curtis, I love that story. And Dolly, you never know when the house cleaner is going to come back and be on the air with you. Good thing you left a note.
Honest, I must have really left a big mess, though, to feel that bad about it. But I don't like to leave. It must have been a lot worse than I usually. And plus, when I do my nails like that, that old stuff just stinks and it leaves a mess. So I'm sure I was thinking, oh, I hate for people to have to come in here having to smell that liquid stuff you use on those acrylic nails. And I don't remember that at all, but I'm always leave a little notes for people. But I appreciate them. I appreciate everything. You don't have to be a star to star in what you do. You know, I just know that everybody's life is important.
Curtis, I like that story, Curtis. I'm sorry there, Dolly. So many calls coming in for you here in New York, East Aurora, New York. Robert is calling. Robert, you're on the air with Dolly.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm both of you.
Hi.
Several years ago, I was driving along listening to an interview of you. I think it was out in the Bay Area, but it might have been a national show. And you said something that really crystallized an essential piece of my practice. I'm a psychologist, a psychotherapist. And I don't remember exactly the question. It might have been, you know, what's your secret to happiness or something. But what you said was, figure out what you're doing and do it on purpose. And it just was, it sort of perfectly crystallized what I try to help all of my clients do. It's harder than it sounds, I think, for most people. And two things, I guess I just wanted to thank you for that and give you credit. I always give you credit when I mention it in therapy. But if you had anything to say about that, how you came by it, was it just an offhand comment or something that you thought about?
Well, I'm sure it's something I thought about. That's the very kind of thing. It's like do it, you know, do it with purpose and do it on purpose. It's like if you're like I talk about in the dream about the definition between, like there is a difference between a dream and a wish. So many people wish, but to make a dream is something that you really plan and work and it kind of goes back to what you said. You got to dream it, then you got to go to work making it come true. You've got to do it on purpose. You've got to purposely put forth whatever effort it takes for you to do that. You've got to sacrifice what you've got to do that. So that is how I feel. And that makes me feel so good that I've said something that it's given you a little bit of hope. But just the same in this little book, this is not going to save the world, but there might be a few little nuggets that might help someone along the way. It's just stuff, how I live my life and how I do my work.
Well, you've got one psychotherapist there passing on advice. It's not from Carl Jung or Sigmund Freud. It's from Dr. Dolly Parton right there.
That's great.
Figure out what you want to do and do it on purpose. It can sound redundant, but I don't think it is. You've got a song on your 2007 album, Backwoods Barbie, kind of along that theme, Better Get to Living. Here's a little bit of it.
You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little more.
Let's go to Katie calling from Jay, Oklahoma. Katie, thanks for calling. You're on the air with Dolly Parton.
Oh, hi, yes. Hi, Dolly. Hi. I absolutely grew up in nothing. My mother worked three jobs, raising me, my brother, and my sister. And I currently go to college right now.
Great.
Trying to fulfill my dreams. I work and go to school full time. And I just want to thank you for being an inspiration in my life. And I also agree with believing in something is better than believing in nothing, because we all have a purpose.
Hey.
Well, amen to that. I love that. Thank you.
Katie, thank you so much for that. Dolly, what's next for you? 66, you used to complain about how the recording industry wasn't easy on people, on performers as they age, but you seem to have done just fine by it one way and another. How do you look forward now?
Well, I have been so richly blessed. I look back on my life and on my career, and I think, wow, here I am at this age, and I still get so many offers to do so many things. So I really feel incredibly blessed. Not certain exactly what I'm going to do yet. I've taken off a little bit of time to spend with family and take care of myself and take inventory and to know what the steps are from here on out that I want to do. And so I wake up with new dreams every day. I will be dreaming from now on. Just like the book says, I encourage older people to dream too, because we all need something to do. We need a purpose in our lives. So I hope to continue doing more of what I do to make better TV shows, better movies, write more books, hopefully children's things. I want to do some TV, hopefully children's things, but I want to produce some TV shows. I want to have a cosmetic company. I've never done that yet, and I really have always just kind of had a burning feeling, and I try to just wait till something says, okay, it's time, and I know which dream that I'm willing to sacrifice for and going to, you know, feel like putting that much energy in, because once I say I'm going to do it, I'm going to give it everything I can and hope it comes true.
Well, you cast a long shadow. Here's a little note from one of our listeners. Misha says, I was riding in the back of a truck in rural Sierra Leone in Africa last September. The driver put on the very best of Dolly Parton on the back roads of Sierra Leone. Turns out that all five Sierra Leoneans and I and the four Europeans in the back of the truck all knew your music. We sang along to the album for hours as we bounced around the dirt roads of West Africa. I guess you've made a little bit of an imprint, Dolly Parton.
Well, I've been around long enough, so hopefully I've done some good and made some smiles come to some faces around the country. That makes me feel good knowing that.
It's been really great having you with us today. The new book is Dream More, Celebrate the Dreamer in You. Dolly Parton, thank you so much for spending
thank
some time
you,
with
Tom.
Us.
Thank you, Tom. This was fun. We'll have to do this some more.
Thanks a lot. Good luck. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Celebrate, celebrate.